Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. I've been noticing that if I put the mic up too high, I get this breathing into the episodes, and I do apologize. I'm trying to cut them out as much as possible. I think I've figured it out. Yeah, pointing up at my face absolves getting too close to my nose. Before I get into today's episode, I just wanted to mention a friendly channel, two buddies of mine. I always talk about the guys I smoke with at the smoke shop. They have a really awesome little fun channel. For those of you who dig cigars, this is their brand. It's called Smoking Gorilla. Take a look at that. They gave me this shirt, but it's like a triple XL massive shirt. You can use it as a bedspread. Yeah, no, I've smoked some of the finest cigars in my life. Well, I'll just say I smoked the finest cigars in my entire life hanging out with those two. Today's episode is going to be called Destination Dream. And I love the fact that when you first hear that, you're going to be like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? You trying to be profound? Yeah, it's going to be awesome, I think. Now, I've said several times on the show that, you know, I do a lot of personal research on things and I have lots of notebooks on things. And so when you think about people doing research outside of a scholarly paradigm, a school, a college, you tend to think, well, can't be any good because he's not sitting inside the walls of a university. When if you go back and again look at all of the brilliant men that discovered electricity, they're working in their shops, tantamount to a garage, with wire, magnets, and some form of creating electricity that they have devised, right? So I want to make sure that you guys understand, and I think, gosh, at least 80% of you know that when you do research at your house, as long as you're willing to do a lot of cross-reference resources and sources, that you have 100% the validity of any, you know, normal institution. You just have to be meticulous about it. Try to use scientific method if you can. You know, create a control group versus the, you know, to give you sort of a basis that's the antithesis of what you're actually looking for. You know, try to make sure that the variables that you're modifying to say that these things affect the other things are controlled. So you have some that don't, some that do, right? So today is going to be me revealing ahead of time, which is something that doesn't happen in normal science because everyone's trying to get published and get credit for things. This is me sharing with you some of the research that I've been doing in dreams, and I've been alluding to this for a while. For those of you who watch the Facebook posts, you'll see it there. For those of you who read the comments in YouTube, you will have seen it there. Little tiny hints of what I'm about to say, but here's the whole project as it has been conceived, which is about dreams. You know, there's a lot of things in the universe that hide in plain sight. They are profound to your very being. They are woven into your very being. And we know nothing about them or it. But it controls who you are. I would suggest that your soul or your spirit is one of those constructs where it is who we are. We are merely voicing our opinions and concerns and being through the mortal coil aperture. And we, due to a tiny little mix-up in consciousness, have forged our belief that we are this mortal coil to the extent that we mourn the death of other people, especially the ones that are old already. You know, they've lived their whole life. They've contributed to you everything they can contribute, and they simply just pass on due to old age. And what people have taken from us early in life, there's definitely, no matter how you cut it, that's a bummer because there's much more that they could give us, right? But I think spirituality is one that is chastised and ridiculed by those, by, you know, 50% of the community that claim to be Christian or religious. I only live in a Christian sector, so that's the only thing I know. But, you know, the authorities on spirituality and the afterlife seem to know very little about it. Then you have your scientific community, which is afraid to believe that there's anything that they don't totally understand on paper because they're so left-brained. But today's about dreams. Today's about the whole process of dreaming. And I've done two episodes on dreaming. But I call this one Destination Dream for a very specific reason. And it dovetails with other theories that are going on this show and other theories that are bouncing all over the internet. It would seem as if man is gaining an amazing level of consciousness. I had a good friend of mine. This was amazing. He said to me just last night, he goes, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to think I'm crazy. But he goes, I pray every day to be able to commune with the spirits of those who have passed. And I said, well, that's interesting that you think that you're crazy for that, because I do the exact same thing every day, because it's another project of mine. We are enlightening each other on a level that's utterly amazing. You know, if you were to be able to see, I believe, the intellectual trading of information and hive mining that's going on in humanity in the form of an energy cloud, it would look like a slow-moving hydrogen bomb, totally engulfing this existence that we're in right now. Whether it be a flat disc or a round ball, it is enveloping everyone, and it's amazing. I actually think that animals are being caught up in this enlightenment. It seems as if the little parlor tricks that animals did when I was a kid, they always sort of fit in the animal box, and nowadays it seems like animals are doing crap that's just a couple steps away from talking to you. You know, I've had this question for several years now. Why do we have to sleep? The idea, and it's you know, it's commonly, just like every piece of information in the world, it's commonly explained as, well, you're tired. And then psychologists have come in and weighed in this creative sort of science fiction description. Well, you have to file away your memories. It's absurd, right? It's as if somehow we have a massive, you know, frontal lobe buffer. You know, the only buffer that we know that we have is a 10-minute buffer of short-term memory that then gets filed away into long-term. And if you get hit on the head, you can lose up to 10 minutes of your consciousness. That's what we know. But other than that, your body is at almost maximum output while you're asleep. How could it possibly do anything less? You don't wake up and part of your skin on your forehead's dead because blood wasn't pushed through the capillaries up there, and cell mitosis suspended itself because it actually went to sleep. Now, you might be able to explain sleep by saying, well, I worked really hard. I was building a house, or I was redoing a pool, or washing my car, or moving a friend, and my body is stretched and torn muscles like crazy, and I simply need to stop doing that on any level so that they can repair. And you'd be right. But now the interesting thing is, you losing consciousness is not a requirement of that repair mechanism. You simply need to sit on your ass and not do anything with your body. Wait for your lactic acid to build up on all those torn spots, and you get super sore, right? Why must every single living being go into some state where they're not awake? It doesn't make any sense at all. And for those who believe in evolution, it super doesn't make any sense. Because the other half of the equation is dreaming. They tell you that you go to sleep. And you have this, you know, REM state where your eyes are going nuts and you're having a dream. And boy, your mind's going extra, extra fast during that phase. So now you're supposedly resting, but your mind's going nuts at the same time. And then eventually you do fall into what I believe is the delta wave, and you actually get that rewarding sleep. That rewarding frequency of not being engaged in this particular reality or any other reality, let's just say. And that gives you this amazing, you know, it's a beautiful morning, that feeling when you get up, right? But why? I mean, I want you to have the courage to ask the question why and be absolutely unwilling to accept virtually all the answers that have been given by the science community or anyone with a hunch. Actually, it's probably one of your grandmothers who has the answer to all this, right? Or one of your four-year-old kids, you know, be like, well, mommy, it's because of this. And then boom, we have the answer. But I don't know any of those. I don't know either one of those folks. So I'll let you know if I do. This is called Destination Dream. So what does that mean? You just pick two words. I think that going to sleep and dreaming are a massive, massive part of the life cycle of mankind. Because it has been enforced as an imperative on man, there's something massive to it. Now, what's interesting is most of us wake up in the morning, and because the ruling class have totally screwed up the world, we're forced into all these paradigms of thinking, forced into all of these, you know, necessities of life that aren't necessities of life, you know. And so this beautiful, beautiful gift, let's say an Adam and Eve would have completely understood being in a Garden of Eden without all these ridiculous burdens. All you need to do is kind of get up and find some food and have some fun, screw, make kids, whatever, enjoy a waterfall here and there. That's the basic design of man and how man is supposed to appreciate naturally being alive. But we don't get that benefit, do we? We're off trying to prove something to someone who doesn't exist, that we can do something that we don't really care about. So when we think about dreaming, it's extra obfuscated. It's extra minimized. Well, I dream, yeah, whatever. I dream. Oh, yeah, I have some good dreams. And they're really cool. You know, I dreamed about last night. And it's sort of like this matter-of-fact thing that we dream. And if you can hear my voice, I want you to start thinking about this being the new frontier of consciousness on a level that is more exciting than finding North America and being a Viking, finding Hawaii and being a Polynesian, finding Asia and being an Eskimo. Because this could be huge, absolutely massive. And I'm going to spring on you something that I have tested with a dozen of my closest, most intellectual friends who are qualified to answer the question. Not qualified because of necessarily academic prowess, but they are all brilliant. But something else I'm going to get to in a sec here. What do they tell you dreams are? Until Freud, no one really dove into a psychiatric evaluation of dreams and tried anything in terms of interpreting the dreams besides shaman and perhaps mystics back in the day, right? I can't say if they were accurate or inaccurate in terms of the mystics and the shamans. Freud definitely contributed a massive intellectual gestalt to understanding mankind, but he also was an extremely flawed man who had phobias and bizarre behaviors, which is usually the kind of individual that becomes a psychiatrist, unless you have the other person. You know, there's some folks that are just smooth and they just are, you know, chieftains, and they become psychologists because they find the answers easy. And so they want to heal people. But I have some friends of mine that are, you know, very open about the fact they said, I got into psychology because I didn't really feel like I was settled with life. And I used the education to fix myself. And then once I fixed myself, I thought I could help other folks. And that's the other half of the equation, right? But what are you told that dreams are? Most of us aren't told anything about dreams, ever. You just have them. And either you're a person that has a lot of dreams, or you're a person that has barely any dreams. Again, I do find that very left-brain people have very few dreams, and right-brain people have endless journeys. But regardless, both sides are probably having dreams. They just don't recognize them due to their disciplines and their methods of living. But they tell you that your dreams are your imagination. Your dreams are ideas that are circulating inside your mind, right? Your mind is the instance of existence, of consciousness between your spirit and your body. Your body facilitates the room, almost like a catering company that says, well, we've got the banquet hall, and your mind is the actual banquet itself that comes in and fills up. But the banquet is actually created by the spirit. How's that for a crazy analogy? Now, all of us have had dreams where we undo complexities in our life and we solve problems. You know, there's a reason why when you get up and you'll get up in the middle of the night and have a solution to something, because you are working on that particular problem. We're going to loop back on that hopefully later on here. Sometimes your dreams will only pan out when you hop in the shower, when you start gaining conscious understandings of your subconscious thoughts you've been having all day. But the root of what we're going to go at today is the fact that you believe that your dreams are your imagination. And there are telltale signs that somehow, that, you know, in a way they prove that it is your imagination, sorta, because you'll dream of your hometown. You'll dream of perhaps your friends. You'll dream of someone you have feelings for. Your children will be in these dreams, right? Your mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and friends will be in those dreams. You might even wake up in your apartment and then there's something else going on. So our imagination might be what it is, but it could be something far more specific than that. So here's the setup of Act 1 in our little episode here. I have ingested ungodly amounts of science fiction material in my life, televised stuff especially. There are 5 different shows of Star Trek that have been made on television with hundreds of episodes, right? I've seen them all 3 to 4 times a piece. I've seen every single science fiction movie several times, right? Like most of you who are geeks. I'm representing Geek Town here. But here's what's interesting, and this is what I've confirmed with every single friend of mine, with these loose exceptions which don't affect the theory at all, what's going on here. I have never once in my life had a dream of being in space. Now, how's that possible? Aren't dreams my imagination? How is it that if I play a little video game on my iPad and I play it for a couple hours, I will go to bed and have a dream about that game? If I play a game that's sort of based on some algorithm on my computer, same thing. I dream my reality with that mechanism overlaid on top of it. I have never had a dream of being in space. I've had one dream of being floating in a total void, with sort of those carbon fibers, you know, floating around me. And it was really disorienting because it's sort of like I felt like I was kind of swimming. Except I didn't really have any resistance like one would have with water. But that wasn't space. That was just some weird void. I've only had that dream one time in my life. So when I finally realized this really basic, simple question or observation that I had never dreamed about space, but I had been told that my dreams are my imagination, I started to think, what does that mean? I asked my friends who have seen Star Trek episodes more than I have, and I'm not being facetious, 6 to 10 times per episode, every single science fiction movie, etc. And then I asked them, I said, well, have you ever dreamed of ever being on the Star Trek Voyager, you know, Enterprise? And my buddy's 65 just goes, never. I never have. I said, don't you think that's weird? Wouldn't you think that one point, because he and I will personally smoke these cigars and he and I will watch 5 episodes of Star Trek, pick a series, and we'll watch 5 episodes in a row. We're not going home and remotely finding ourselves on the bridge of the Enterprise. Are we just lacking creativity? I don't think so. Now, I've posed this to the listeners, and I've got a couple responses which I've actually had in real life where someone will say that they have had a journey through space, but it's been very sort of ethereal and abstract. Meaning they'll say, well, I was kind of like a comet flying through space and stars were all around me and that sort of thing. And I think, well, that's definitely advancement based on my experience, but I said, have you had like a sentient experience where, again, you're in some vehicle and you're traveling around? And let's face it, when you watch 10 Star Treks in a row, let's just say, that reality is just as real as your own. Especially if you're willing to let your suspension of disbelief kick in and you just enjoy it, right? So now let's think about the two words, destination dream. If dreams are limited to, well, put this, let me reverse it. If dreams are not controlled by your imagination, and our experiment that proves this is that we can't dream about things like being in space. And there's a lot of questions as to whether or not space exists. And for those of you who are all up, you know, up in arms about anyone talking about flat Earth, and that star field that you see up there is not what you think it is, because none of you have been there, and I haven't been there either. And the agencies that say that it is what it is have lied out their ass since they existed. If my imagination can't get me to something I can totally and completely conceive of, but I can go to crazy places. I've seen things in dreams that couldn't possibly exist. But the environments are still based on where I am right now. Maybe what we see when we go to sleep is limited to true destinations that exist in some form of reality, somewhere in the universe, somewhere in this computer simulation, and that we cannot actually be in any place that does not exist. Hence, destination dream. When you dream, you are going to a destination that actually exists. You cannot go to a destination that you merely imagine, which is what you've been told your whole life. I'm putting this out there now. So if I get a random individual that sees this, and they may have had these dreams, and please share it in the comments. I mean, as detailed as you possibly can. I want frequencies. I want details. I mean, really, just write a book and then paste it into the comment section of this video for me. Because I haven't found a single person that has had a true, engaging, real-life scenario dream in space. And isn't that interesting? So what would that mean if that was correct? If dreams are more of a destination than they are your imagination, which means you don't have control, sort of, you know? Now, I did an episode on my dreams last season, the very first one, and I talk about the movie Dark City. We're going to touch on it just a tiny bit here, because the interesting thing is that we know we have to sleep. We have to do it eventually, no matter how much someone might try to stay up doing drugs, or if they're tortured staying up, they want to go to sleep. So you're not really contradicting any of the necessities of sleep. You've merely created a mechanism by which you can delay the inevitable, right? Consequently, Star Trek had a very interesting episode where no one could go to sleep, and everyone started going crazy. I think that was interesting. So we have to, you know, we have to say that this is either part of the normal ecosystem of who we are, which we know that's the case, right? We have to go to sleep. Again, some folks think they don't dream, and it could be that they actually don't. Maybe they're non-player characters in our little video game. And then there's folks that dream like wildfire, like myself. My dreams are so unbelievably vivid that I do wake up in the morning wondering which one's reality. It's really odd sometimes. But the movie Dark City has a very interesting basic plot, which I'll just share so we can get on with it. The human beings have been abducted from Earth, put on a flat disk, which is a city. It's always in the dark, and they cannot escape the city because it's kind of built like a video game. Every time you try to leave down a street, it just happens to be blocked by something. And everyone seems to accept it, and everyone goes to sleep at night. And just like the Twilight Zone, where the gentleman was waking up in the Groundhog Day every day, they do what's called tuning in the movie. They move people around. Someone's wife will be someone's girlfriend the next episode when they wake up in the morning. The mayor will be the chief of police, you know, the next day. But they do what's called tuning. And the movie, I believe that you should see this. If you're slightly interested in dreaming, you got to see this movie. It's got Kiefer Sutherland in it. Sort of was a sleeper, meaning a great movie that no one really realized was great. But in the end, it was a group of aliens, which, man, once you start getting into the conspiracies of the internet on the firmament and the flat earth and these big giant overcoat humans with black hats running the world. And they've got videos of these big weird guys going into hotels or surveillance footage of it. This is exactly what the bad guys look like in Dark City. And they're the tuners. And they live in the base of the spine of a human being. Or I should say, you know, base of your neck, talking to someone's brain. And they are the ones that do the tuning. Now, I'm not, you know, trying to suggest that when we go to sleep that there's guys in overcoats coming up to our bodies when we're asleep. Obviously, a lot of households have rotating college students and various individuals where someone's always awake in a house, so that wouldn't work, right? But I think that the black coat guys are sort of a metaphor. The film itself might be on point as to what is actually occurring to us. Now, I made an episode on dreamscaping, which is the notion that when you sleep, you actually have the ability to use your law of attraction to escape this particular version of reality and go to a better version of reality and simply wake up a lot closer to the frequency of existence that you want and until you eventually reach your destination, and you're there. And I still hold fast to that as well. The dreaming is a gift, that perhaps it is a mechanism by which you get to separate from this entire instance of reality, right? And go to a different instance. It might take you a few trips. You know, if you got to travel 100 miles, maybe a dream only gets you 1 mile, and you got to dream 100 times that way. I don't know. Just a hunch. That's all that was. But then there's this thing where I can't go where I want to go. The other one is that I have had one dream at least where I felt like I was on another planet completely, because what I saw was definitely not Earth. It was an organic planet made out of these sort of massive bamboo-looking trees. And when I say massive, we're talking, you know, miles high, and just the base of a tree must have been, you know, at least 100 miles wide, that kind of thing. And there's a bunch of them, and it was, the whole planet was covered in these beautiful kind of green bamboo rods that would come up from the ground like a tree trunk and go up, and then like a reed, like a tied reed, would go up and make a trunk. It was all organic. I didn't see any life, although I felt like I was looking through a smoked window as if outside it was either hot or cold. It was early morning look. And the ship I was in sort of flew over to the one of the trunks. It was a very quick dream. I was in and out within 10, 15 seconds. So that's the most I've had in terms of an out-of-body experience or an out-of-world experience in a dream. Again, I've dreamed of, you know, I'm from Kansas, and so I've had hundreds of dreams where I'm looking at the Kansas plains in the middle of the night, and the rolling, beautiful rolling hills in Kansas are lit by lightning bolts, and there I'm looking at, you know, two dozen gigantic tornadoes all spaced out and tearing up the land. That's all based on, you know, being where I am and messing with the variables of where I am. So let's look at the difference between dream reality and this reality so that we can start getting a grip on this thing. Obviously, this reality is pretty tight, the one that you're listening to me in today. Unless you are far more talented than I assume, you have to kind of abide by the rules of this universe. Forget anyone telling you how to believe or telling you how to think. You know, we're not the little kid bending the spoon in the Matrix yet. But I do like the little kid's saying inside Matrix. I mean, it's probably one of the most profound lines in the entire movie. He says, "I don't bend the spoon. I bend reality around the spoon," or something like that. Just inverted the entire mechanism of how that might occur. I think that's brilliant. Here comes a helicopter right over my patio here. So when you're in a dream, what's possible? A lot. Some of you might accurately say that anything's possible in my dream. Some folks have claimed to have lucid dreams on a daily basis, and that they actually solve all their life problems within the dream. A lot of software engineers have claimed this over the years. And maybe that's what's happening for them. But what's interesting about the dream world is that we have control. We, as individuals, have control over our dreams. it is based on two constraints still, which is interesting. It is essentially a constraint of where you've been, but it seems to have a constraint. You can't dream about places that are drastically different than where you've already been. Now, I might dream about being in an Irish pub, and I've never been in an Irish pub. Well, I've been in some in America. Maybe I just watch a documentary and I see one, or I play a video game and I'm in one, and then all of a sudden, because they really exist on planet Earth, I can draw from the Legos of this world to build a dream. And that's sort of how I feel like they work. All of our dreams are built out of things that really exist in this world. You'll always have your dream people. Your dream people are folks that feel extremely familiar to you. You are completely and 100% usually satiated with them being around you, but you don't know them. Even if you walk into a big crowd, it's all right. Somehow, you're the star, and they'll move around you, do whatever. And that's what the dream's made out of, right? Well, let's go into this tuning idea, because the interesting thing about the tuning in Dark City, it was very primitively orchestrated in the movie, and it had to be, because it was a movie. You can't go terribly deep into it without losing the audience, and therefore losing a distribution of your film, and probably the film itself, right? Because the studios won't touch it unless everyone gets it, you know? But let's re-engineer the concept of tuning. For those of you who've played video games for at least 10 years, and it's better if you've played them for 20 years, there's two designs of video games out there, and they're still created to this day. You will log into a video game on your computer that hasn't moved a single second since the last time you logged in. And it only moves forward if you move it forward. Like a Words with Friends. It doesn't play turns while you're gone. And then there are games like Clash of Clans where while you're away, your little base is being attacked. The troops that you have queued to be built are built till it hits the maximum capacity of your troop containment. And it lives while you're gone. So mankind as a being, if we're in a computer simulation of some sort, and again, I hate saying that because you guys think of like a desktop computer or something. That's not the point of saying that. It's just that we're in an automated system, an automated ecosystem that runs itself. God may be sitting there playing the video game, moving every single character constantly, which I think is a little absurd and insults a supreme designer's capabilities, right? Or worse, some game that runs when the creator is offline. And this creator is smart enough to say that these are the rules by which you can exist. I have built in protection mechanisms on you. I've built in opportunity. I've built in all kinds of interesting invisible rules and invisible resources that if you simply try, you'll bump into them, and you'll have a good life. That's an idealistic world, right? But it used to be that we'd program things on the internet especially, and everything ended up being sort of a tool at the very beginning of the internet. It was, I built this tool, and it does this thing, and people show up, and they experience what I have provided for them as a tool, and they are unable to do anything more with the tool than I have devised for them. And then the internet got interesting, and it said, well, you know what's going to happen is we're going to let this organically grow through the participation of the community. Meaning, I've got some basic things it can do, but I've built a lot of tools that the audience can use, that the internet community can use to create something bigger and better than I actually imagined. And so you'll find that, for instance, Yelp built a system that says as long as someone is willing to do the due diligence to enter a business into the database, a restaurant that's not currently in the database, then individuals can start adding photographs, other information about the place, ratings. But no one at Yelp knows that the local pizza place down the street was just invented. They simply built a tool that allows you to do it with the system. And so it organically grows using the participation of the internet people themselves, right? All right, just hang in there with me here. Life is something, this particular sentient, awake consciousness is the previous version, which is that we have to personally move every bit forward as a group to get anything to happen. You can't get out of bed unless you get out of bed, right? You go to sleep, and of course your autonomic system's doing all kinds of crazy stuff with your body, and there are a lot of objects outside of your immediate participation that continue doing what they do. Your emails continues to get computers, and there are a lot of other human beings in the world that continue doing their online participation. But really what we are in this consciousness is everyone's participating live. But when you go into a dream, it's not quite the same, is it? It's more nebulous. It's more abstract. It's metaphorical. Things are symbolic and they have meaning, right? I recently had the epiphany that potentially this, I find the firmament idea really intriguing on a level that has nothing to do with the flat earth, really. Flat earth comes with the firmament idea, but the idea that we're in some petri dish of reality, doesn't matter what shape it is, honestly, doesn't matter if it's a dome overhead or whatever, but rainbows are shaped like domes. But regardless if we think we're on a ball or whatever, in this space that we cannot seem to dream of, something's going on here. Regardless of what you believe, something is going on here. We're not something from nothing. And we are beautifully designed. Anthropologists, we think, have uncovered plenty of evidence that the missing link of mankind was an extremely intentional upgrade on our being. So who knows where we are? When I talk to my buddies and I say, look, have you ever dreamed about space? And they say, no. And I go, well, are you a science fiction fan? They say, I'm absolutely obsessed with science fiction. I say, isn't it weird you haven't dreamed of space? The potential impact of this reality is so utterly massive that my most intellectual friends who sit around all day long, smoke cigars, and have these extremely deep conversations are speechless. And I'm speechless too, really. This is my attempt to make it not speechless, right? And just think about it. When you wanted to study dreams, if you've ever been that kind of person to go, man, I'd really like to study dreams and figure out what the hell these things are because I have them all the time and sometimes they freak the crap out of me. Sometimes I wake up in some paralysis mode and I can't move. I feel like I got someone over me. You know, there's all kinds of weird little things like that. Might beckon to some hands-on tuning, right? I barely know a friend that hasn't experienced sleep paralysis where you wake up paralyzed. And feeling like there are entities in the room with you. And in the end, they obviously aren't hurting us. Unless you're Whitley Strieber. But this idea of not being able to dream about space, isn't that a thread in the sweater we can start pulling out really, really fast, right? But I had this idea about the firmament, which is that we are in some sort of maturation dish, which is like we must grow up within this reality. Our souls need to reach a certain level of consciousness, of intellectual ability before we're able to move on to the next destination, next form of life. Or in a drastic situation, perhaps we're in the most humane prison ever built. And that's why the concept of being born with original sin exists, because we committed a crime to get here. And it doesn't have to be some Hitler crime. It could just be we weren't as pure loving as we were taught at some point in a previous life. And so we're here to learn. We're here to get along. I would say a lot of people are failing the test right now. But if that were the case, then maybe dreams were sort of like a guaranteed playground. You know, when you go to prison, you sit in your cell until they let you out for an hour or two. And that's when you get some freedom. Isn't it amazing that the most hardcore prisons, even solitary confinement, has an hour off once a day where you can go eat and shower and sort of get out of your cell? What if a dream was a guaranteed playground to get back to sort of the more nebulous existence that is who we are? It's a guaranteed little reprieve. And hell, you get, you know, if you sleep a normal regimen, 6 to 8 hours a day. Now, that's a cynical view on the purpose of dreaming. Again, for those of you who have really had your mind blown by the fact that we can't prove the world is round. This illusion of a firmament is merely and completely designed to make us believe that we are not captive in a dish. Because if we thought for a second as a global consciousness that we were captured in a dish, the world would be on the South Pole rim trying to knock the wall down. We would. We'd try to break the dome to get out of here. We'd probably fail, but we would try. And they can't have us trying. So everything is designed to make you believe you're on a heliocentric ball. You can't travel the speed of light, which means you can't leave this world. They fake missions to stellar bodies, which are round in space. You know, I've seen them with telescopes myself. I've seen Saturn with the telescope in my buddy's backyard. So it's a round thing with rings. I've seen it. I can see the moon every night. I can see the sun. So they have chosen to put these objects in our view so that we feel like the story is complete. And hell, you know, if the Force Line Project succeeds, then we'll figure out and prove for once that the world's round. But then we have these dreams. Why do they exist? Oh, let me throw this at you. I am unaware of a dream that I've had that doesn't hit me in a profound level. I don't have stupid dreams. And I don't think anyone does if you really look at the experience and the emotional arc that you have during dreams. Let's say you had nightmares. I had nightmares as a child from probably about the age of 4 to the age of 7. Then I had another bout at the age of 12 one time, and I ended up figuring out how to kill the villain in my dream, which made me a man in real life, which started when I was probably, I guess, 8. When I was 8, I kicked the shit out of this thing that was haunting me. It was crazy. But I felt like it was sort of was massively profound. You know, I mean, I became fearless of all things. It doesn't matter if I'm standing in front of someone who could rip me to shreds. I don't want to experience it, but I'm not necessarily afraid of experiencing it. I hope you understand the difference there. But it was when I was a kid, I watched a lot of scary movies when I was really young that I shouldn't have seen. My dad was sort of a joker, and so he would haunt me with those dreams because he was young. He didn't understand the impact on a child. But in the end, I don't think I would take it back. I don't think I would criticize my old man for absolutely fucking terrifying me during these dreams. I don't believe that. Because it made me a man once I conquered the villain. Now, when it showed up again when I was about 12... I fought it and kicked its ass. You know, it's all make-believe inside my brain. But think about it. Dreams will move you in very big ways. There was a point in my 20s where I was dating someone, and the relationship was kind of, you know, it was okay, but it wasn't really going where I wanted it to go. And I started having dreams of women. And they were my girlfriends. They were like instantaneously my girlfriends. Sort of like one of those things where you go out and you find your, you know, you bump into the love at first sight kind of girl. And what I would experience is they would, you know, we would hug each other and we would like just have that moment of like, damn, you like me as much as I like you. And I think you're freaking amazing. And it looks like you think I'm amazing. So, geez, this is that moment that God makes for you, you know. And I had that probably 3 times over the course of a couple months. And what I realized in my dream when I woke up from the dream was that the thing I really wanted was someone that appreciated me, unlike the person that I was with. It was just that simple. And so I made changes in my life and got rid of the person that didn't appreciate me. And I even told her about the dreams. I go, you know what? I'm really realizing that this dream person is giving me the basics of life that everyone needs, that you seem to be incapable of empathetically giving to me. And that's fine. It's cool. I'm moving on. And when I found the next person that gave me that feeling, it was like heaven. But what I find is that your dreams, they have a profound impact no matter how small they are. And let's not forget that. Because once you realize the dreams are only mildly crafted by your imagination, but are restricted to the destinations that actually exist, whether you're hodgepodging, you know, worlds together, you know, like I came from, like I always say all the time, I come from this little town in the Midwest, and I'll have dreams of a futuristic version of my hometown. And I don't know if I'm seeing the future, where someone is, you know, the buildings are 100 years out from where they are today, and it's just really cool and gorgeous. And I don't know if I'm seeing the future or if I'm imagining that on top of the place I'm from. I tend to build worlds that are very comforting in my dreams. I don't really have any, I don't wake up in some crazy, you know, video game world like Fallout or anything, even though I love that game. So now think about this tuning concept. If all the dreams that we have, all of them have a profound effect on who we are as an individual, forget interpreting them. That's a whole separate art, which I think that we're, you know, at best we're bullshitting ourselves a little bit about what that is. We're tuning ourselves. We are tuning who we are as an individual, and it seems to be obviously exclusively given to each one of us. What do I mean by that? Well, I might know you, you know me in the real world, but at no point in my life will I have a dream and you're in it, and then you wake up and you go, "Were you there?" And I'm going, "Yeah. Wasn't that cool? Wasn't that 50s diner awesome?" So what are the takeaways from this episode that you can start doing your own research, and we can create this sort of online research project within this thread of this video? The first question that you need to carefully answer is whether or not you've had a fully sentient real-life experience in space as it was portrayed to you through fictional stuff that portrays space. Because that's the only thing we have, right? None of us have been in space. You know, even an astronaut that goes up into low orbit, that's not the space I'm talking about. There are people who have homes that are completely covered in Star Wars stuff. If you're one of those people, or you know a person like that, go up and ask them, "Have you ever dreamed of being on the Death Star where you look out the window and you're in space?" You know, it might be that we could dream about, you know, steel walls and that kind of thing and believe we're in a Death Star. But the idea is, if you've been in a TIE fighter flying around in space, you've been in the Millennium Falcon, the Enterprise. I've seen Aliens, the movie, I don't know, 24 times. I've never had a dream of being stuck on that mining planet. The movie Alien was the first thing that ever gave me a nightmare. It wasn't really a nightmare, but I sat in my bedroom and everything was that alien, you know, because he was like stuck in the walls and stuff. So I literally went home and could not sleep. And I felt very uneasy because I thought it was in the room with me. But it was merely me overlaying on top of my little bedroom when I was 9. The alien, the Giger alien, you know, somewhere in the room. But I never went to sleep and had it chase me. I was never there. So if you're one of those folks, let's start a discussion. But I want you to think about your dreams also as infinitesimally mild as they might be. I want you to think about your dreams and how they affect you. You know, I had a dream 2 days ago where, you know, the subject of Prince dying, you know, hits me every once in a while. Because people on my thread will post videos about him and, you know, kind of go in and out of, "Geez, I can't believe this guy's dead." And so 2 days ago, I was probably my third dream like this, where Prince is setting up for a tiny little concert in some little private venue. And he's actually participating in setting up the equipment because he wants it to be perfect. And I was there setting up equipment with him. And this particular time, he was talking to me as if, "This is where we're going to be able to meet each other and talk, is in dreams, because we would have never met in real life." So just to kind of ease you into the concept that I am no longer a mortal coil, I am here with you, and we'll set up concerts, you know, and you'll watch me perform or whatever. He only performs for a few seconds, and then I usually wake up or something like that. But even if that's a fictional thing that I'm creating in my brain, it creates a cushion for the death of a celebrity that I believe is, you know, the best thing we've had since Mozart. So let's monitor how subtle, well, let's just monitor the impact of dreams, regardless of how subtle or how profound they are to you. Now, the thing about nightmares, I've done 2 episodes on dreams, and I get done with it, and I publish it, and I think, "Oh my God, I forgot to say this one thing." And I think I kind of alluded to it, but I want to put it on point this time in a big way. If you suffer from nightmares, I want you to understand that this is an opportunity for you to slay the dragon, to engage your rite of passage, to own your own world, and feel utterly and completely invincible, fearless, and amazing. Try to remember this on a daily basis. I mean, if you're having nightmares for any reason whatsoever, and nightmares are so different that it could be, you know, something that this won't necessarily lend itself to, but try to find a way to get this particular strategy to work for your experience. Because none of you should be having nightmares, right? While you're awake, I want you to repeat to yourself some form of, I can't wait to have this nightmare again. Because I'm going to go in there and I'm going to kick its ass. And if you want to see a really interesting transformation in a character, a fictional character in film, go watch Dark City. Watch the third act when this guy takes control of his world and kicks the asses of the aliens that are tuning them and constraining them. Because that needs to be you, and that will be you. If you can remember how your nightmares go down, then you can sit here and strategize. And go, okay, when that happens, I'm going to do this. You know, I know for a fact that if I were to ever have a reoccurrence of the dream when I was a child, I would love it, right? Because I would slay, you know, as an adult, and I don't have the dream anymore because I don't go in with that attitude that that can happen to me. Because when you're a child, you're sort of subject to the universe. You allow life to happen to you as opposed to you happening to life, which is how you have to live your life. This isn't some random thing happening to you where you're the pinball being knocked around by the pinball machine. If anything, you're a pinball with a little motor inside, and you get to go wherever the hell you want. You want to get hit by a bumper? Well, go hit it. That's how life works, right? But get excited to get in there and kick its ass. If there's a focused villain, even better. If there's a giant gorilla three stories high that's coming at you and ripping up every house in the neighborhood just headed for you, instead of running, just say, I'm Superman, I'm Superwoman, and I'm going to tear your arms off of your body. I'm going to fly at you so fast, I'm going to punch a hole through you. You know, this ends today, and I will be the victor in this dream. And boy, I tell you, when you wake up after that experience, holy hell, you know, going to work won't be a problem, right? When someone yells at you outside, you're just going to play it off. You'll be like, whatever. You should see the thing I just kicked last night. You know, the ass I kicked last night. If you suffer from sleep paralysis, which can be a nightmare in itself, I forget about how safe I am when I wake up in sleep paralysis. It only happens maybe once every 6 months to a year. But I'll have these dreams where well, it's actually the quasi-dream where I think what it is, the only thing that sleep paralysis is, in my opinion, probably, I'll give you a little caveat to it, but is you know, there's agents in your mind that make you asleep, right? And so you can't wake up because you can't move your body because your body is still boiling off the chemicals that were used to keep you asleep. Your body goes into a very specific state when you're asleep. Otherwise, you'd sit there and piss yourself constantly if you had to pee, right? Not to mention some other stuff you would do. So you wake up and you're still paralyzed. Now, the weird unanimous thing, the caveat that I will say when I wake up in sleep paralysis is that what'll happen is if I'm laying to my right, I'll wake up in paralysis and I will feel like someone's behind me. And I've actually had it where if I'm on the edge of my bed and I'm facing that way and I wake up in a paralysis mode, it can be that I can't open my eyes, but I'm conscious, right? It's like when you just lay down and pretend like you're asleep and I'll feel like there's a body over me. The thing that I have to remind myself, and I usually, you know, hit myself in the forehead afterwards, I go, I'm in no danger. Whatever is there doesn't mean me any harm, obviously. Because then I wake up in some laboratory with an anal probe in me, right? The reason why I don't like waking up like that and fearing someone who's not doing me harm is that what could their perception of me be besides ignorant? Here they are not hurting me, and I'm sort of panicking like a baby. I don't want them to think I'm that shallow. I just hope they stick around long enough to see me have that epiphany after it's all over. But I want you to study the settings of the dreams that you have. Where are you? Have you ever been there before? I've had plenty of dreams where I have never been in locations, or I've taken a house that I grew up in and I've added rooms to it. I've added secret rooms, secret chambers. I used to think of my uncle's house, which is two houses down from where I grew up. It was a beautiful, like, three-story home. Actually, sorry, it was three stories. It had a basement as well. But the upper third floor was sort of an attic. And I put an extra floor and then moved the attic up one. And it was like this quaint, beautiful sort of Sherlock Holmes study. It was just ornate. And it was as if someone very interesting had lived in that floor almost secretly. And they were brilliant. You know, it was like the room is just full of so many little, you know, Hogwarts knickknacks that it was just like, oh my God, I just want to study all this stuff in here. So I've had that dream several times. And the secret passageways to get in and out of the room. But I think that most of the dreams I've had have been, you know, taken from things that I've seen. I've molded them into destinations, but it's always Earth. That's the thing. So are we going to another destination when we dream? Are we going to another reality where we have more control over it? Wouldn't that be sort of a heaven by any definition? A simulator that we get to control, where time doesn't really matter. No one really gets hurt. Your dream people are your friends, but you don't know them. Then there'll be that one person you know. So this is the stuff that I'm studying right now, one of the subjects I'm studying and trying to piece together some, you know, where logic seems to be fairly exclusive, right? I have not been able to dream about space. And now when I go to bed every night, I will either say out loud or really intensely put in my brain, let's have a dream about being in either one of two places. On another planet that is absolutely not human. I've always wanted to dream about being in a city on some other planet that is made of a creature that is as intelligent as man, or if not more intelligent, and I want to see them going to work every day. I want to see their jam traffic, their family life. I just want to be sort of a fly on the wall, maybe even look like them and be able to walk among them, right? And see what they do. And I've never had that dream either. But the big one I'm just trying to have right now is Star Trek. I'll go to bed at night and I put my head on my pillow and I'll start dreaming about scenarios of being on the set of, you know, Star Trek as if it's real, right? But no matter what I do, I can't get there. But now here's the catch. If I say, boy, I'd really like to go to my hometown in the next dream. If I do that four or five times a week, I'll have the dream of being in my hometown. It may not be exactly, and I don't put out any specifics, but maybe my grandmother's house, maybe I'm downtown, maybe I'm in my uncle's place in that secret floor, but I'll be in my little hometown. So why is it so easy to go to places that really exist? And again, I think it's because dreams are destinations more than they are your imagination. Your imagination is sort of the paintbrush on top of it. I think you feel me. I can beat that up from a million different angles. Let's make this one packed with some comments. Give me your dream experiences. Give me experiences. Give me anything you think is just profound. Things, especially dreams that changed your life. Let's talk about that. You know, I'll get to your comments. Trust me. Even if you reply to someone else's comment on YouTube, I don't see it. And so I don't know. Some of the episodes have over 130 comments, and I've probably read 30 of them because they're only, you know, there's only 30 original threads in the video. If you haven't been already, go to mkultraradio.com for all the feeds. If you're coming through video, there's audio for your car. If you're coming through audio, there's video in case you want to sit in front of your computer or your phone, just watch what's going on here. We're doing really well. I appreciate you guys. Please subscribe if you dig it. Like it if you like this particular video. And spread the word if you can. Let's get as many people in this sort of level of consciousness that we possibly can to increase the world. The goal of this show is to rebuild and refortify and rebrand the bottom of the pyramid, because that's how we change the world. I'm going to say that more often nowadays. Regardless, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.